somebody asked me on the way in, is this the last class? I assume that they meant, you know, with respect to this semester.
No, we still get to have Rabbi Friedman, God willing.
But I do want to say that my, you know, deepest hope is that it is the last class ever on Kinos. You know, we're al pi halacha, we're supposed to, you know, make sure that you're not really supposed to save things from one Tisha B'Av to the next. Because we have a tradition from the Navi Zechariah of Tzom HaChamishi Ela Beis Yehuda L'Sasun L'Simcha. So in response to that question, I'll say that I definitely hope, Tzipi Sali Yeshua, that this is the last class ever on Kinos in all of Jewish history. Oh, I'll try to make it a meaningful one, but that this should be it. You know, we'll try to go out with something meaningful. What I wanted to try to do today is to explain a particular kina. It happens to be the 17th overall kina, or the 12th kina that we recite during the daytime. Again, I want to acknowledge that's according to Nusach Ashkenaz, you know, the way that I'm used to saying them. In that order, there are obviously different edot, but Zechor Asher Asa Tsar Bifnim. And this is a great example of how, by studying the kina, at least for me, I was able to connect two different Gemaras entirely that I had never thought about juxtaposed with each other. But the motif of this kina is to take these two different stories from the Gemara, both of which we'll learn, which have to do with the Agados of the Churban from Masech Gittin, and to juxtapose them to each other. And again, were it not for the kina, I would have never appreciated this connection between these two different Agados and how this kina is able to raise our consciousness, I think, and to give new meaning to these two very, very meaningful stories. But like I said, that I would have understood in isolation if not for the kina. So if you take a look here, this is the first source. You'll see why I titled the shir from the sea depths. The pasuk which is quoted is from Hazinu, from Shiras Hazinu, Va'amar e Elohemo Tzur Chasayuvo, that at the time when the Jewish people are suffering, there will be a statement which is made. It's not clear. There's a discussion between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah about Shiras Hazinu, who exactly is verbalizing this. Is this Klal Yisrael saying, you know, where is Kadosh Baruch Hu to protect us? Is this the Goyim saying that God has abandoned them? It's not entirely clear. But Zeh, the Gemara tells us, Titus HaRasha, that this can be attributed, this is according to one view within Chazal, to our enemies, to Titus the Rasha. Remember, we talked a little bit about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and how when Vespasian was called back, of course, to Rome, so Titus took over. He would later, of course, become the emperor, but he took over the siege, as the general from his father. But his personal role in the Churban was very dramatic and very graphic. Is that Titus HaRasha Shechirev V'gidev Klape Malo. So this pasuk from Shiras Hazinu is being ascribed to Titus HaRasha, that he was Mecharev U'Megadev, that he engaged in blasphemy, and he said, you know, where is God? That he saw the victory over the Jewish people not as evidence of divine justice, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was allowing this to happen, specifically because the Jews had rebelled, and even if that sounds a little bit idealistic, that's exactly the way that Nebuchadnezzar understood it. It's a big difference between Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni. Titus took it as an opportunity to say, "E Elohimo Tzur Chasayuvo," okay? That God, you know, has abandoned the Jewish people. Totally different Edom versus Bavel. Okay, so Ma'asa, so what did he do to demonstrate this sentiment? So Tafa Zona Biyado v'nichnas aveis kachei akadashim. So he took a zona and specifically went into the place that was the most sacred of all of the sacred spaces in the Beis Hamikdash. And then, as if that wasn't enough, v'hitzia sefer Torah v'avar aleha avera. So he uses the sefer Torah to desecrate the sefer Torah in the process of desecrating the Kodesh HaKadashim in this fashion. So this is what I would call the, you know, most blasphemous act imaginable. Let's try to describe the different Chilulei Kedusha that are going on here. my Rebbe Rav Rosenzweig Shlita likes to point out about Yom Kippur that it's the convergence of three different kedushos, the three different realms of kedusha that we have in Yadus all together. So the person who's invested with the most kedusha in Yadus is the Kohen Gadol. Okay, and all of the avodah in Yom Kippur has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. The holiest place in Judaism, of course, is the Kodesh Kadashim, and the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh Kadashim. And the holiest time in Judaism is Yom Kippur, Shabbos, Shabbaton. So in terms of Kedushas HaMakom, Kedushas HaZman, Kedushas HaGavra, it's the convergence, it's all three Kedushos coming together. Here you have the same, but in the opposite direction. So he was Mecharef u'Megadef Klapei Mala, he desecrated the name of Hashem. Blaspheming Hashem is one of the Mitzvos b'nei Noach. It's one of the worst averos a person can do. If a Jew does it, chas v'shalom, they get not only skila, but there's a second punishment that they get, which is called taliyah, which you only give for two averos, only for avodah zarah itself, and a person who engages in birkas Hashem. So that's one desecration. Of course, there's a second desecration of the Kodesh Kadashim here, and third, a desecration of the Sefer Torah. So you have a triple convergence. This is, you know, a very orchestrated act to take that which is kadosh from every direction and to desecrate it. Okay, but he wasn't done. V'natol sayif, and he takes a sword. Now let's just remember for a second that one of the main principles of the Beis HaMikdash is that there can be no swords there, right? The idea is that it's a place of shalom. Now remember that David HaMelech wasn't allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash for that reason. Ish milchamos ata v'damim larov shafachta, even though we're not criticizing David HaMelech, just as an objective fact, he had been involved in many wars. And Shlomo, and as the pasuk says in Devarei Yomim, shalom v'sheket yeh b'yamav, that because there's association with peace, so Shlomo is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. And not only that, but we know, you know, very famously that when Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, he took the halacha to the nth degree. The halacha says that by the Avnei Mizbeach, lo sivna eshen gozis, ki char becha hinafta aleh v'techala, that the Avnei Mizbeach. Now, the Alpi halacha, the way that we understand that is any stone which is used in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash should not be hewn with Barzel, because Barzel is the Mekatzer, and the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be Marich Yamav Shal Adam. But Shlomo HaMelech took that even further. Shlomo HaMelech didn't want that there should be any sound of hewing and cutting stones in the natural fashion when the Beis HaMikdash was built. And so there's a remarkable passage in the Gemara, actually, the Gemara in Masechta Gittin as well, much later than this, but there was a special worm called the Shamir that he had to capture. I have a son who's very good at capturing worms, but this was a more involved process. They had to capture some demons and then interrogate them and then find that, yeah, very good, Freddie, excellent. So they had to get the chief demon, and getting him was no small feat. You know, he's an elusive character. Then they captured the worm. So anyway, it was quite a to-do, but to take a charev itself is a desecration. V'natol sayif, v'gider es ha-parochas, and he severed the parochas. You just remember, the parochas is v'hivdil ha-parochas lachan bin ha-kodesh uvin kodesh ha-kadashim. The parochas is meant to ensure and secure the privacy, the tznius of the kodesh kadashim, right? That's what the parochas exists for. V'hivdil ha-parochas lachan bin ha-kodesh uvin kodesh ha-kadashim. It's itself a reflection of the Midas Hatznius, that in Yadus, that which is more kadosh is more private. That's one of the things we believe. We don't believe in exhibitionism and exposure, etc. And Titus, who was obviously involved in the opposite, in the ultimate act of Pritus, so it's not an accident that he's slashing the parochas, right? The parochas is a symbol of Tznius, and he's destroying it. Vinasanes. And at that moment, Hayadam Mivatzve Tzviyotze, and the parochas started bleeding. This was the miracle, and the blood is literally pouring out of the parochas. V'chasavur Harages Atzmo Shne'emar Shagut Zarecha Bekerav Moadecha, that to be shoeg literally means to roar, like a person is shoeh ka'aryeh. So the tsar, the oyev, in the very space of your abode, your holy abode, samo so sam osos. So in Titus HaRasha was like, you know, convinced that he had, you know, committed deicide, that he had been able to successfully kill a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Abba Chanan Omer, Michamocha chasen ya, Michamocha chasen v'kasha, shata shomeya ni'utso v'gidufo shel osa rasha v'shosik. Commenting on this moment, with all of the different levels of chil, of desecration, that Titus HaRasha was engaged in, so Abba Chanan commented that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's forbearance, his capacity, lihitapek, for self-restraint, is just beyond our comprehension, because how could he allow this to go on? It's very reminiscent of a Gemara in Masech Yoma, where the Gemara tells us, regarding the Anshei Knesset Sagdola, why were they called the Anshei Knesset Sagdola? Sheikh Ziratar Lyoshna, that they put HaKadosh Baruch Hu's crown back on his head. It was what happened. Moshe Rabbeinu described HaKadosh Baruch Hu as HaKel HaGadol HaGibor VeHanora, and then after Chorban Beis HaMikdash, Yirmiyahu no longer called him HaGadol HaGibor VeHanora, just HaGadol HaGibor, but he couldn't call him Nora. And then Daniel, when Daniel was davening from exile, davened to HaKel HaGadol, but didn't say Gibor VeNora. And the reason they didn't describe a Kadosh Baruch Hu that way is because Kaviyachol was like a Kadosh Baruch Hu wasn't on the same level that he allowed, you know, his house to be destroyed. So Anshei Knesset HaGadola said the opposite, Fakert. They said, no, that is the greatest sign of how awesome he is, how powerful he is, that he was able to restrain himself in the face of these provocations on the part of the Umos Olam. So that's exactly the comment that Abba Chanan is making. Likewise, Michamocha ba'ilim, Hashem Michamocha ba'ilmim. An ilim is somebody who is not capable of speaking. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu rendered himself, he silenced himself at this moment of provocation, of extreme provocation, not to respond. So me'asa, so natal asaparochas, continuing on with the story of Titus, v'aso kemin gargutni, v'hevi kol kelim shebemikdash, v'hinichan bahem. So Titus takes the parochas after it's been slashed and bled, and he takes all of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and he lays them out on the parochas. V'hoshivan b'sfina leilech li'ishtabeach b'iro shenemar v'chein ra'isi rishayim kivurim v'avau. So he wants to bring the spoils of the Beis HaMikdash back to Rome. U'mimakom kadosh yalechu v'ishtachu v'ir Asher Kain Asu. So Al Tikri Kivurim Ela Kivutzim, that he gathered them together. Al Tikri Vishtachu Ela Vishtabchu. And he thought he would, you know, get a lot of Shevach, that there'd be like some kind of a victory parade. This, you know, you can imagine the Arch of Titus, this was his conception. Okay, so the Gemara is commenting on his thought process. So Ika de Amri, no, even more. Kivurim Amish Dafilu Mili de Mitmaran Igloyan Lahon, that even those Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash that we know going back to Bayis Rishon, in the days of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, there were certain things that were hidden. There was the Aron and the Tzolchis Haman, etc., that even those were exposed to him at that moment. They were Nikbarim, and now they're exposed. So again, this is Titus' idea. He's going to take the Parochas, and he's going to use it to gather all the Kalim. He's going to wrap them up. He's going to bring them back on the boat, and he's going to make a big parade in Rome when he returns as the conquering hero.
Why the Gargutni?
So that literally means to use it as like a cloth that wraps things together. And the parochas is one of the, you know, klei hakodesh itself. So to use it in this fashion is obviously not a respectful usage, but it's hardly the worst thing he did that day. Okay, so Amar Alav Nachshol Shebiyam Latovo. So as he's taking the boat, you know, across the Mediterranean, Eretz Yisrael, back to Rome, so there's a storm at sea, and a wave, an enormous wave, comes to destroy his ship, to drown him, and to bring divine justice to Titus after all that he did. So Amar, so he comments the following way, Chimiduma ami shalohem shal elu en givuraso elo bamayim. Baparo tivo bamayim, basisro tivo bamayim, this is Nachal Kishon, Afu omer alai letov eni b'mayim im gibor hu yalul yabasha v'yase imi milchama. So Titus comments and he says, "Look, you know, home field advantage. You know, that God is always looking, you know, for an opportunity at sea, You see that Paro, he drowns in the Yamsuf, and Sisera in the Nachal Kishon. And, you know, this is, you know, just more of the same. He waited till I was at sea to try to attack me and to drown me and to, you know, punish me for everything that I did. Okay.
He's a smart man.
Right. he's clever in this way, right? Okay. So he says, okay, so if you're really a gibor, let's fight on even terms.
That would be the ultimate chutzpah, right? Despite of everything they did until now,
right.
This has got to be the key, the culmination of this chutzpah.
Yeah. The chutzpah is a good word to use for this. So, Yatzis Avaskol v'amrlo, Rasha ben Rasha ben Menoshel Esav HaRasha, Bir Yakala Yeshe Biolami v'yitu Shema. So, Amai Kari Le Bir Yakala, Demalana Isla Mafkana Leisla, okay, that it is able to go in, but it's not easy to extract. So, Alul Yabasha v'tase imam Milchama, Alul Yabasha. So, again, without getting on to the continuation of the story, which is a very interesting continuation, how Titus ends up being felled by a fly. Okay, but Titus is Ola Liabasha. He lives to see another day after this confrontation at sea. Okay, so now let's go over to the Kina. Let's see how this scene is portrayed in the Kina, and then we'll get to sort of the second story here, and we'll see how the Kina is able to tie them together. So this is where it says, Kina Tazayin, Zachar, Asher Asa Tsar Bifnim. Remember in the Gemara, we referenced Titus as the Tsar. Okay, so commenting on that. Remember what the Tsar did Bifnim. Remember Lifnai V'Lifnim in the Kodesh Kadash. And Kodesh Baruch Hu should remember that. Tisha B'Av is a very big day. There's a lot of different things that are going on, but we do try to draw attention to specific instances within the Churban that stood out, and this was one of those moments that stood out, what Titus did in the Kodesh Kadashim. It was all bad, but this was a different level, a different Madrega. So Zechor Asher Asa Tzar Bifnim, this Kina draws specific attention to that. Shalof Charbo, he took out his sword. Uva Lifnai V'Lifnim. If you pay careful attention to the words, you realize that there's a Tarte Mashma, there's two meanings to the term ba lifnai v'lifnim, maybe in Yavin, nachlasenu bi'es ketime lechem hapanim. He caused our nachala to literally shake out of fear, like bi'asusa in the Gemara, is a sense of great fear, trembling, as he defiled the lechem hapanim. Again, notice the theme of bifnim, lifnai v'lifnim, lechem hapanim, Vigider parochas ba'alas shtefanim. And he cut up the parochas. The parochas was very fascinating. It's what the Torah describes as ma'asei choshev, as opposed to ma'asei rokem. I've commented here in the past that I'm not capable of doing any of this, so I'm just going to describe it, and please don't take this as any endorsement of my capacity to do any of this. But there were certain elements, the curtains in the Beis HaMikdash, or ma'asei rokem, where the design was the sort of on the back was the same as it was on the front. Okay, then there's something called Maaseh Choshe, which the Parochas was, where if you looked at it on one side, there was one form of embroidery, and then on the other side, there's a second form of embroidery. That reflects the idea that it's two different zones, right? So that the zone outside, as holy as it is, what we call the Kodesh, is a different realm than the Kodesh Kadashim. It has a different face. So that's what the Kina is referencing here, V'gider parochas ba'alas shtefanim. Avosenu zara kichnisu bachurav achla esh, v'zet so ezona hichnis v'lo nichva bo esh. So the Kina goes on to describe how painful this moment was when Titus did what he did bifnim. He says, our ancestors, somebody will hopefully tell me what the specific allusion is here. So when they brought in the Zara as Bahurim, they were consumed by fire. Who is being referenced?
Nadavim.
Oh, right, exactly. So whatever you think happened with Nadav and Avihu, right, that they were Shesua Yayin, or Mara Halacha Bifnei Rabbam, or just that they weren't commanded to do it, Asher Lo Tzivo Osam, or they weren't Ru'uyim because they were disrespectful to Moshe and Aaron. And there are so many different ways of thinking about the Nadav and Avihu story. I just want to point out that no matter what you think they did, they're not in the same league, ballpark, as Titus HaRasha and what he did, okay? It's Mizrach Mimarav. And yet, what happened to them for their desecration? Ve'esh Yatzal Lifnei Hashem Batochal Osam. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu, divine justice came, Keherefayin, right away. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't wait. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't negotiate. Kadosh Baruch. And here, Vizat Soa Zona Hichnis Velo Nichwa Be'eshin. And he brings in a zone. That whatever you think about a Ketorah Zara, a zona it's not. And that is something which is extremely painful for us. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so defensive of the sanctity, Lifnai V'Lifnim, Vayamusu Lifnai Hashem, and this one, that he is able to walk away from this, Binafshenu Tavanu Kehotzi Klei Shares, and when he took the Klei Shares, remember as described in the Gemara, right, it was the sense of we were just drowning, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could abide this. I just wanted to point out that somebody who steals a Klei Shares in the Beis HaMikdash, does anybody know what the punishment that's associated with that is? This is a very specific category. It's called Hagoni Vesakisva. It's a very specific category in Halacha. If somebody takes a Klei Shares without permission out of the Beis HaMikdash, okay? The Halacha is Kanoim Poginbo. That it's the same status as what happened in the story of Pinchas. There are only four things in Yahadus where we say you can take the law into your own hands, and because of the aggrieved Chil Hashem that it reflects, that a person is not only permitted, but according to the Rambam, is Zariz and Meshubach, you're not required. You're allowed to kill that person on the spot, and those things are a person who curses HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in a particularly egregious way, what we call Mekal B'Kosim, one that became famous because of the story of Pinchas, a Boel Aramis B'Farhesia, the way the Rambam understands it. There's another category of a Kohen who's Misharis B'Tama. The Kohen knows that he's Tame and goes into the Beis HaMikdash anyway. And then the fourth one is Hagoni V'Sakiswa, somebody who steals the Klei Shares. One! Forget about, you know, what he ended up taking. This is something which is considered to be, it's not a regular act of stealing. It's not dealt with as dine mamonos. It's not like somebody comes and steals my tennis racket. It's not that. It's considered an act of egregious defiance of the Beis HaMikdash that a person would so brazenly. So, b'nafshenu tavanu kehotzi klei shares, v'samam ba'ani shayet, and he put them in boats, bam lihi shares, right? And he planned, you know, on using them for his own purposes, his own orgiastic purposes. We know that this is an echo, certainly, of, you know, Bayis Rishon, V'chelim Mikelim Shonim, that Achashverosh is debased Su'uda, the use of the Klei Shares there, right? So that in this respect, you know, Titus was interested in continuing that ignominious tradition. O Reinu Namak Kihishkim Mishares, Velomata Tishim Mushlosha Klei Shares, and our skin literally began to imagine. This is described when, like a nuclear Armageddon, that the skin on people literally dissolves. But we were so beside ourselves. It's like we were drowning. It's like our skin was peeling off. When the Mishares, when the Kohen, quote unquote, woke up and He recognized that all of the Klei Shares were gone. Okay, so this is the Kina's description of all of the different desecrations that Titus HaRasha was engaged in. Good, okay. So if I just had this, and we'll go over to Susan in just a second. So if I just had this, I would say, okay, this is a very evocative, meaningful portrayal of a moment of total desecration. And I would have appreciated the Nadav and Avihu connection that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them no respite, and Titus HaRasha is, you know, given, you know, much more, and stealing the Klei Shares itself was horrible, and the destruction of the Parochas, which, you know, reflected all of these things. I just said this is, you know, important to understand and appreciate. Okay, good. But we haven't even started, I think, to scratch the surface. So, Susan, go ahead.
I read some historical documents that said Titus was very disappointed. But when we get to Rome, they didn't make a big deal about it at all, and they gave him this little tiny, I mean, if you go to the Arch of Titus, it's very small compared to others. and it supposedly was the smallest of all. So he didn't really get what he was looking for.
Yeah. So actually, somebody who's a bit of an expert in Roman history told me the same thing, which I thought was fascinating. But I asked him, and maybe you know, maybe you can edify me. I asked him, why not? Why did you find that out?
What I read was he was not very much respected.
Okay.
He was really a wild, really impetuous kind of a kid. And that's a kid. He was a kid. So that was one of the reasons.
It's really interesting.
And
makes a lot of
it's
sense.
Also very cute. This is totally digressing. Is when you see the movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Do you know how they die when they touch the ark? Their skin melts.
Ah!
I wonder if they did research and they read this or something. And that's
okay,
what
if
they
I had more bikinis, you say it's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
They definitely did the research.
Okay, very good. I hear. That's excellent.
I understand my daughter was in Rome a couple of years ago. She said that the Arch of Titus is so wiped out now you can barely make out the...
No, we saw it.
We saw it.
It was very clear. 15 years ago. And it would be in such a short period of time to be destroyed. It's just very small and it's in rubble. I mean, it's really, nobody goes there, just the Jews go there.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's not very clear.
Oh, really?
Okay, so now the, again, seemingly unrelated story in the Gemara, I mean, related in the sense it has to do with the Churban, but I would never have necessarily made this connection. I never did make the connection. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'yisemer Rav Ami, V'amri lo b'masni satana. So there's different traditions where this came from, but everybody agrees on the authenticity of the story. So Maisa b'arva me'os yuladim v'yuladus shendishbu l'kalon. So a big part of, you see this in Eichon, and it's also in the Kinos in terms of Churban Bayesheni, that one of the great tragedies within the overarching tragedy was the children taken into captivity. We already discussed that in terms of the children of Rabbi Yishmael much earlier on in this series, but here you had a massive number of children who understood very well why they were being taken. Why they were being taken to Rome. This wasn't, you know, some act of mercy, a kinder transport. This was for the very deviant purposes for which the Romans wanted to use them, and they had this understanding. So, Hergishu Ba'atzman L'mahein Mizbakshin. So, to their credit, also painful for us to think about the fact that they recognized this, but these children understood that they had been allowed to live and were being transported to Rome for a very specific, very debased reason. So Amruim Anu Tovin Bayam Anu Bayin L'Chayolam Haba. So they began to wonder amongst themselves that they know that in Yadus we have a very, very profound tradition of life, of affirming life, and not, God forbid, to be Chovel Ba'atzmacha, that a person should not in any way harm themselves and cut short their own life, usually, you know, no matter how bleak the circumstances are. This is, by the way, al pi halacha, without getting into the whole sugya now, one of the main sugyos that we deal with. So darashan agadol shebehen, so the oldest of the children, or the most knowledgeable of the children, or maybe both, so he said to them, amar Hashem mi bashan ashiv mi mitzulos yam. Mi bashan ashiv mi ben shinei aryeh, ashiv mi mitzulos yam, elu shetovin bayam. So he cites a pasuk to them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu restores from the very depths those who need to be drowned in the sea. So Kevan Sheshama Yulados Kach, so when the girls, there were, let's say, an equal number of girls and boys or whatever it was, so when the girls heard this, Kaf Tzukulon V'naflu L'Sochayam, they all drowned themselves because they understood that if their kavana was L'Shem Shamayim, and they didn't want to be taken for these purposes, they would be zocha l'olam haba, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be meshiv them from the mitzulos yam. So nasu yuladim, so then the boys drew the following kal v'chomer. So nasu yuladim kal v'chomer ba'atzman ve'amru mahalalu shedarkan l'kach kach anu shein darkenu l'kach halachas kama v'chama. So the boys draw a kal v'chomer and say that even though it's not nothing acceptable about it, chalila v'chas, but even though there's a certain natural tendency that they should have been, that the Romans should have wanted them. But for us, it would have been unnatural. And so if they're prepared to sacrifice their lives, and again, for those who have learned the sugya of Yiharig Val Yavar, know that for women to be subject of assault is not clearly Yiharig Val Yavar. Okay, that's a tradition that we have of Karka Olam, that a woman, and this comes up in terms of Esther and her actions, and this is a very complicated topic, but within certain parameters, a woman is considered to be totally passive and can choose to preserve her life. Whereas for a man, we have a principle of in kishoy al ladas, that a man is always considered to be active. So in any event, the boys understand that their halachic achrayus is greater than it is for the girls.
They should have been jumping in the water first.
Maybe, maybe they definitely. If the girls did this, they felt that they should. So
it's often, a play on words. You see that Bashan and Bain Shinei Arye is a play on words.
Very good, very good. So
is there a symbolism there also? Shinei Arye, is there a symbolism
usually,
of Rome or something?
Usually, right. So that's typically understood to be a reference to Bavel. Then Nebuchadnezzar is compared to the Ari.
Right, because they have the temples. And yeah, but it's definitely a play on Bashan. But it's
yeah. And that's it's even interpretation of it, right? So Mibain Shinayari, right?
Yeah,
Bashan.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Right. So Afhim Kafsu Lotokhayam, so they jump in. Valeyam Akasav Omer Kyalacha Uragnu Cholayom Nechshavnu Kitzon Tivcha. Now, again, I just to point out without, you know, I don't want to, give anybody the impression that it's a simple thing ever for a Jew to take their life, even under the most extreme circumstances. So the Bali Atosos point this out. I'll just mention it very, very quickly, but again, please don't consider this to be a comprehensive halachic discussion. So the Bali Atosos ask from a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Ches, which is also appropriate for us to discuss, says, "Mutav shi talena misha nisana val yechabel ba'atzmo." We have a very moving Gemara of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, and Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion was being burnt with a Sefer Torah, and he was being executed by a fellow by the name of Klos Denuri, and his Talmidim were present. His Talmidim asked him, "What do you see?" And he says that he sees that the parchment is being burnt, but the osios are baruchos ba'avir, that you can never destroy Klal Yisrael, the Sefer Torah, that's eternal. So in any event, the question was raised, maybe he should expedite his own death just by opening his mouth. That way, the way the fires would consume him. Again, this is the most gruesome and painful form of death. And that's what he responded in that context. Mutav shetelena misha nesana val yechabel ba'atzmo. Interestingly, the nuance here is that Klos Denuri, who had artificially wrapped around Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion's heart in wool that was soaked to cause him greater torment, he asked if he was allowed to remove those after he saw the spiritual level of Rechnei Ben Tradion. Says those you can remove. So basically all of end-of-life halacha is figuring out the difference between opening your own mouth and removing things that are artificial. When I say thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of tshuvos have been written trying to figure out what's what and which is which and how we, properly alpi halacha, care for people at the end of life who are suffering. So it's all about this. In any event, the Gemara makes it clear that even in the most extreme situations, a person can't be chovel ba'atzmo, val yechovel adam ba'atzmo. So hacha. So Tosus says two things, which are important to take into consideration. Not the end of the discussion, but pater below klomi efsher. So hacha yireim hayum yisurin, kidaminu nomole nogdu lechananya mishal v'azarya palchu letzalma. So it was not really comparable to the situation where Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion is already in the process of being killed and nobody was compelling him to do any Avera. They were very concerned that they would be tortured and compelled to perform certain kinds of Averos. So the Gemara comments, Hanani Mishal Nazaria, who agreed to be thrown into the Kivshan Eish rather than worship Nebuchadnezzar's Avodah Zarah, whatever you think of that Avodah Zarah. So here these children don't have any guarantees yet as to what lies in wait, and they're concerned that they might be tortured and compelled to commit certain averos, and maybe that's the difference between this case and the case of Rechnei ben Tradion. Then a second point of Ode, This entire Gemara, the Gemara of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, assumes that death is an option, right? They were killing Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, but in this case, who knows that they would have ever agreed to kill the children? That wasn't the question. The question was specifically being taken for purposes of being assaulted and subjected to a performance of deviant actions. So again, the Balei Tosos say maybe it's not in any way an analogous situation. So again, this is an important part of the discussion, and there's much more to be said. But this is what they did. They thought that it was better, rather than to be forced, but even beonas, to be part of certain grave kinds of averos, better to jump into the sea, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take them into Olam Haba. Ashiv mimitzulos yam. Okay.
Rabbi,
yes.
So are you saying also that there may be some who have said that they shouldn't have thrown themselves into the sea?
Not on the spot in the Gemara, but there are certainly many Rishonim and Poskim who say that we can't draw any kind of a klal for ourselves
based on
this story. Nobody's looking to criticize them, you know, in terms of the decision that they made, but whether it's appropriate for us to draw halachic conclusions from that, that's where people say, you know, Mishiv and Allah Drosh, and that in terms of, you know, core halacha, even if people are, you know, very, very, very concerned about what awaits them, that taking one's own life may never be an acceptable option. Okay, so again, I would have thought about these two stories differently. One about a titus, lefnai v'lefnim, the other about an incredibly harrowing incident with these children who are so brave and clearly did what they thought was spiritually correct, and the Balei Tosos feel that it can be justified, and certainly nobody here is going to be critical. But the Kina continues on and puts the two stories next to each other in a way that I think is incredibly creative and also incredibly meaningful. So Atata Katsafta, the Kina says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you became very angry at us.
What Kina is this?
Same Kina as before. This is just the continuation. So I just chose to separate them so you could appreciate, you know, the pivot. So Atata Katsafta V'Hirshesa L'Fanos Yiladim Asher Ein Bahem Kolmum Misham L'Hafnos. So in your wrath and anger at Klal Yisrael, you allow these children, Asher Ein Bohem Kolmum, that were blameless, that had no averos, that had no avonos, even though Klal Yisrael as a whole, we had much to answer for. These are pure children. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed this to take place. Again, you can see the continuation of the literary theme of Lefnai V'Lefnim, and we talked about the Lechem HaPanim and the Parochas that had two different panim. Okay, so this is the Lefanos, Lahafnos. Lamba rag shugayim veloshata la mincha pinos, that the gayim are creating a stir, and you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's based on the pasuk in Tehillim, and you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are disregarding, you know, what we're offering you. Vishulchum la eretz kush b'shalosh sefinos, okay, and you sent them on these boats. Hashivenu shivu kivau b'nivchei yam, as they, the Kina is now dramatizing what happened when they landed in the sea. They jump off the boats and they're landing in the sea, and we, in the Gemara, we only get the conversation that happened beforehand. But now we get a perspective of what happens in the sea. So once they, you know, plunge into the sea, Kibov and Nivchayam, they cry out, Hashivenu. Remember, they asked, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would you take us into Olam Haba? So they're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring them back, right? He said, Hashem, mi bashan ashiv, ashiv mi mitzulos yam. So they're saying, Hashivenu, bring us at least into Olam Haba. These are the last words before they pass away, they drown. Vishitvu atzum yachad linpol bayam, as they're mishatef themselves to go into the sea. Shir v'sishbacho shoriru ke'al yam, ki alecha huragnu b'mitzulos yam. And this is remarkable, but that they went down with a shira, with praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if we were at the Yam Suf, as if it was a moment for Yeshua. They went with the same pride, Alecha Horagnu, because this was our way of being Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, even in the depths of the sea. This is the ultimate kiyum of Kishem Shem Mevarchem Ala Tova, Kach Mevarchem Ala Ra, that they went with Shiros V'Tishbachos without any anger, without any sense of why is it that we're not going to live full lives, ever become parents ourselves, but that this is the Ratzon Hashem, and they went with Shiros V'Tishbachos on the lips. And again, just to appreciate, as we'll appreciate in a second, the contrast to Titus, Kita Homos Ba'u Ad Nafshan, they were drowned in the depths and, of the sea, Kolzos Ba'asnu V'Losh Chachanucha, all of this occurred to us, and yet we didn't forget you. Chilu L'Mamashan V'Ichal Moshe, with the petitions to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to take stock and to sense our suffering. Tikvasam nasnu l'meisha bibashan. These children put their hopes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring them back. Uvas kol nishma ura lama tishan. And the bas kol could be heard and saying that we should, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should awake and he should arise and not sleep through this, this great calamity. Okay.
It's interesting, actually, because ironically, the water for these children was their salvation, in essence. And Titus identified the water as the one that kills.
Ah.
So they kind of stuck.
Exactly. Okay, so, Aliza, that's what I never realized before this kina, is that the whole idea is about the sea. That Titus, on its face, right, he's able to escape from the sea. He's Olam min Hayam el Hayabasha, right? And these children drown in the depths of the sea. Okay, and on its face, that's what it looks like, right? That, you know, here you have Titus HaRasha, and he, you know, does the most horrible things, and Nadav and Avihu didn't get away from it, you know, for a second, and, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has all this, you know, patience for him, as it were. And, you know, here you have these blameless children that have done nothing wrong in their lives. Yiladim asher ein b'hem kol mum. And they're drowned in the sea, and like, you know, at the surface level, tarte mashma, you would think that, like, you know, how could it be that Titus is ola min hayam el hayabasha, and these children never set foot on dry land again? But the truth of the matter is, right, that you know, if you look more deeply in terms of what the kina is trying to point out, is it's true on some superficial level that Titus survived and they did not. But if you think about, as Aliza was pointing out, the life of the soul, so these children have a legacy of purity. These children have a legacy of not being mecharef umegadef. Remember, Titus, the first thing that he did, as we saw in the Gemara, and as was pointed out in the Kina, was cursing the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did these children do? They said, Shiros v'tishbachos, they were matzdik es adin. All they wanted was to die in the right and proper way with kedusha, and that what appears on the surface to be some, you know, great victory for Titus HaRasha, you know, is actually a reflection of the fact that he was debased, profoundly debased, as we'll get to in just a second, and these children reflected the spiritual resilience of Klal Yisrael. And that we could raise children who could forget about what decision they made and the complications of that decision, but we could raise children who could ask the question, what is the right thing to do in this situation? What would Hashem want from us in this situation? Is a profound testament that in the end, we have great confidence in our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in the ultimate victory that Klal Yisrael will have over even the worst and most debased of all, you know, of the enemies, including Titus HaRasha. This idea of Hashem Yibashan Hashiv, Hashiv Yimitzulos Yam, that when you're dedicated to Hashem, no matter how far away you are on land or at sea, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring us back. And that, I think, is so significant in terms of the contrast that the Kina is trying to develop. Titus went in Lifnai V'Lifnim, as close as you can get, and he thinks that he can kill HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember, he stabs the parochas, and Dima La'atzmo, he imagines himself that he's killed God. And, because he went into God's house. But where is God to be found at this point? God isn't really to be found lifnai v'lifnim. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been mistalik at the house. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the Metzulos Yam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with those children, as far away as you could get from the Kodesh Kadashim, deep, 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 deep into the sea. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is present. Ki tehomos ba'o nafshan, kozos ba'asnu, remember that language of ba, that Titus came to the Kodesh Kadashim, v'lo shechanucha, that we've never forgotten Hashem, and wherever we are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. Tikvasam nasnu l'meshev ibashan. And they knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, forget about lifnai v'lifnim, no matter how far we are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can always bring us back as a people. So I just wanted to share the epilogue to the story, as it were, from the Gemara in Gittin. So, after Titus came onto the Yabasha, so as we know, he becomes the emperor, and he eventually dies. The theme of the sea comes back. So this is the fourth and final source. So ki havakamayas, when Titus was dying, amar lahu, so he said, l'kluyu l'hau gavra, so I want you to burn my body, uvadaru l'kitme ashav yami, and I want you to spread my ashes on the seven seas. D'lo lishkeche elohad yudai v'lukme bedina, so that God shouldn't find me and hold me to account. Okay. So it's fascinating, right? The connection to the sea. He wants to be scattered to the seas. But also, right, this idea that Titus, even though, right, he came out of the Kodesh Kadashim saying that he thought that he had killed Hashem in the Yom HaDin, when he had to face his own mortality, he knew that that was farcical. He knew that that wasn't true. Okay, it gets even more interesting from here. So his nephew, Titus' nephew, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, works in strange ways. So Titus' nephew was Unklus Hager. So Unklus Bar Klunikus Bar Achde de Titus Hava. So he was considering converting. So Boy Ligure. So Azal Aske le Titus Binigida. So Amar le Man Choshev Bahau Alma. So he consults with his now deceased uncle, as part of his process of contemplating a major lifestyle change, to say the least. So he asks him, who is Chashev in the Olam Haba? So the response is, Amar Le Yisrael. So he says that Klal Yisrael is. So Titus has to admit that. So he says, so in light of that, right? So Ma'olid Buke Behu, what would you think about me converting? So Titus responds the following, Amar Le Milaihu Nefishin. There are many rules in the Torah. V'lo matzis l'kiyum minhu. There's no way that you're going to be able to live up to those standards. So given that, this is Titus's, advice that an uncle would give a nephew, career advice, lifestyle advice. He says, yeah, you don't want to go in that direction. So what I would advise you to do is, Olam Haba may not be in the cards, but try to make the most of Olam Hazeh. Zil igri behu ba'u alma, so you should try, like I did, to become their chief enemy in this world. V'havis reisha d'chsiv hayut sareha l'rosh. That those who, again, getting back to the original Gemara, are the tsar, so they, at least in Olam Hazeh, will be, elevated. So Titus is saying, you're not going to have Olam Haba, because who can really keep all the mitzvahs of the Torah? But you should try to go for Olam Hazeh. So Kol Ameitzel Yisrael Nasarosh. So Amar Le, so Unklus wasn't really convinced just yet. He says, well, okay, but if you're telling me, forget about Olam Haba, but what is your experience like there? Because, I should have all the information. So Amar Le, Dine Dao Gavra B'mai. So Amar Le, so he says, well, if you want to know what goes on with me up here, B'mai De Pasek Anafshe. So it's like a Mida Kenegin Mida, hoisted by my own petard. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes me every day in the following manner. Kol Yoma Mechanchi le l'kitme v'dayani le v'kalu le mivadri le ashev yami. Every single day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers my ashes from the seven seas together, and he burns me again, and he scatters me. This is what I go through every single day. So there's a couple of just points that I wanted to try to draw out here. Number one, right, this idea of Hashem mibashana shivashiv mitzulos yam, that Hashem can gather, right? What did he gather? He gathered the soul of these 400 souls, I should say, of these 400 pure children from the depths of the seas and brought them to Olam Haba. Titus, right, he gathers his ashes from the seven seas. It's not beyond the reach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and subjects him to this punishment again and again and again. You're never beyond the reach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The only question is how a person lives in Olam Hazeh. These children chose to leave Olam Hazeh for their reasons, for their reasons of religious conviction, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu was meshiv them to Olam Haba. Titus, you know, in his attitude, is being brought back from the seas, but in exactly the opposite way, not for Olam Haba, but for Gehenim in the worst sense of the term. Second of all, again, as you can see very clearly from this Gemara, that Titus says the following about Yadus as an observation. Milaihu nefishin, that the standards are very high. He's talking to his nephew. And he says, Lo matzis l'kiyum minhu. And his attitude was that there's no way that you can live up to that. You can't go in that direction. And that approach is very, very reminiscent, to go back to the Gemara, of how Titus is referred to. Remember? Rasha ben Rasha ben Beno shel Esav HaRasha. Well, what was Esav's attitude? The Chazal tell us that when Esav made his choice, he said, Hinei anochi holeich lamos v'lam ezali b'chora. So what was he talking about? That to be the b'chor was to be the one who did the avoda. And he said, but there are so many rules that are involved, right? And, you know, you make a mistake in one direction, you make a mistake in the other direction, you could end up like Nadav Yaviyo. And it's true. We have very high standards. And the Esav way of thinking is, I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to have to live my life with discipline. I don't want to have to live my life with standards. Okay. And that leads a person down the path of an Esav HaRasha, or Ben Benoshel Esav HaRasha, Titus. We look at it the opposite way. We say, you're right, Milayu Nefishin, there are very, very high standards. But you know what the greatest proof that these standards are doable is look at these 400 pure children who, to the very, very end, in the most extreme way, all they wanted to do was to live by those standards, and if necessary, to die by those standards. But we don't understand our lives in such a way that we think that the whole point is to advance ourselves. We look at the world as a requirement to serve Hashem. And that means serving Hashem in our life. That means, if need be, that we serve Hashem as these children decided. And again, please draw no halachic conclusions for now, but that our lives are subject to living in a way that's consistent with Ratzon Shemaim. So the gap between these 400 children and Titus is really as far as one can imagine about one's conception of the world. If one's conception of the world is we're here for our own pleasure, so the extreme, extreme, extreme version of that is Zona Bebeis Kadshe Kadashim, kill Kadosh Baruch Hu, destroy any source of authority, I don't have to abide by anything. The opposite of that is what these 400 children, you know, did in the Mitzulos Yam. They reflected the idea of living, sometimes dying, according to Ratzon Hashem, but seeing that as fully consistent with why we're here in the first place. The end of the story, of course, is that in weighing these two worldviews, Unklus, of course, decides that there's a very clear right choice. And to live, you know, for this world, and to live, you know, in a Titus fashion of, you know, trying to just to extract the pleasures of this world, you know, pales in comparison to what Klal Yisrael stands for, and that he, you know, of course, then became, you know, part of eternity through that choice. So, you know, from the depths of the sea, you know, whether it's the ashes of Titus HaRasha or Kadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, doing judgment every single day, or the neshamos, tahoros of 400 Jewish children, nothing is beyond the reach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem ha'aretz u'mloa, tevel v'yoshveva. Kadosh Baruch Hu reaches everything in this world. The only choice, ultimately, is whether we acknowledge that Malchus Shamayim or we don't. the path of the 400 or the path of Titus HaRasha, and hopefully, you know, even in the midst, as we said at the beginning of the series, so even in the midst of the tragedy of what happened to these children, we too can say our own Shiros V'Tishbachos, because we're part of a legacy, we're part of a chain that's produced children like this, that in every generation has produced children who wanted to live in accordance with Ratzon Shamayim, who understood that their lives were for a particular reason, and made choices that reflected the highest degree of spiritual resilience. And so you can't read this kina, you can't learn this kina, you can't read about their shiros and tishbachos as they were drowning in the sea without saying, you know, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, what a pride it is for us to belong to Klal Yisrael. Other people might look at it and say, you know, who would want to belong to a people that suffered this way? We look at it and say, it's hard to feel like we can even live up to these standards. It's such a great source of pride to come from a people that has lived according to the values of Kiddush Hashem. And so hopefully we can take that as a true message of more than a chatzi nechama, but how proud we are to belong to this tradition. And God willing, with that, as I said at the beginning, this will be the last year in the history of Klal Yisrael, a very proud history of Klal Yisrael, on Tisha B'Av, and it will be L'Beis Yehuda, L'Sason, L'Simcha.